It was on the planet Earth in May 1996. My old enemy Michael Grade had left the BBC, a new 90-minute TV movie. It was a request that would surely lead to a new series of Doctor Who. Or maybe not.
Hello there, and welcome to a special Doctor Who Target Files on the Doctor Who TV movie. We're going to discuss the book and the audiobook. The book is written by Gary Russell, and the same with the audiobook is also read by Paul McGann.
Hello, welcome to Doctor Who Target Files. This is Mike from Swansea. Yes, on the subject, 20 years as we record this evening, the 27th hour since the movie was first broadcast in the UK anyway. Slightly controversially at the time, it was actually released on VHS sell-through a fortnight before in the UK, and it had been shown in America already at this point. Going to start off, Al, just before we give the overview, initial thoughts of the book. Can we just say where we were in life at the time? I believe you were 14 years old, Al?
Yeah, I think just do my GCSEs, that sort of stuff. And I believe I watched it with my my mum and dad at the time, because it was quite exciting, because I've always been in Doctor Who, and I thought, oh, it's going to come back, because we've had that wilderness period with nothing except the Virgin novels, and thought, ah, we've got a chance here. And I thought it was very good at the time, but it didn't seem to do much, unfortunately.
No, I was 19 in the end of my first year at uni in Cardiff Institute, it was at the time, doing business studies. Pretty tough period for me because I didn't like being away from home and I didn't really like the course I was doing. Yeah, it definitely piqued my interest. I had fallen out of love slightly with Doctor Who. Got back into it by season 26, Sylvester McCoy's final one. Unfortunately, the final run of the original run of the series piqued my interest. I was very tempted, not on a student budget. When I saw In and Around HMV, WH Smith in Cardiff at the time, I saw the VHS on sale a few weeks before the broadcast. I was tempted, but I managed to resist and sat down on the bank holiday Monday, waiting to revise for my end of first year exams. Sat down eagerly waiting to watch it. To be honest, slightly disappointed at the time. Loved the opening. Almost couldn't take it or leave it, really, and I really got back into the McGann TV film again just before the Russell T. Davis series started in 2005, and thoroughly enjoyed it then, had matured as a person and took a lot more from it at the time. Still almost love it. Well, no, I will say I still love it to this day now. Got the DVD, both editions of the DVD that have come out. Love Paul as the Doctor. Thoroughly rate it. Really disappointed now that there wasn't a series, to be honest.
Well, that's good to know. I'm a bit in the middle because I quite liked it at the time, but it didn't feel completely Doctor Who. It did feel a bit too American. It did feel like more American dramas you had at the time, like The X-Files and things like that, I thought.
I watched the documentary on the Revisitations box set, released by To Entertain back in 2010, the second edition DVD release of the TV movie. A documentary called The 7-Year Itch explains the development. TV executive in the States, Philip Siegel, who was a fan as a child growing up in Britain, and his various knockbacks and persistence, really bloody-minded persistence in getting Doctor Who back on the TV screens. And I'm very thankful that he did. I think it paved the way for the modern series. But as you say, just too Americanized. I think the documentary explains it was being pulled in all sorts of different directions by BBC Worldwide, by Fox in the States, by Amblin Entertainment, who were involved. It's a fascinating story. But, I'm really just glad it's there, and I do enjoy going back to it now and again, and I think Dr. Grace Holloway, played by Daphne Ashbrook.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah, Chang Li, played by, I think the correct pronunciation is Lee G. Tiso.
I think that's wrong.
Please correct me, but I think it all comes together well. Yeah, it's a great film.
But I think it has matured over time, and it takes, you know, more you watch it, the more you enjoy it. There are some annoying special effects, but I think they've come to sort of be quite good in the end.
It hits on so much of Doctor Who's Britishness, but only in patches, doesn't it? I think it's...
There are some great bits, and very well done in the audiobook and the book, which they sort of bits with, you know, Paul McGann using references to the old Doc, you know, to Tom Baker by giving jelly babies to cops, and the no guns bit, and the great bit in the park.
Oh, that's just such a memorable moment, isn't it? These shoes, Paul says, and it's...
Well, it apparently has caused a lot of controversy since, though, because it's the first time the Doctor kissed anybody, apparently.
Yes, it's ten a penny now, 20 years later, isn't it?
It's like back then it was something major, now it happens every season.
I think that's evolved in sci-fi writing, isn't it? In the modern world, really, we're just far more comfortable with characters becoming romantically involved, sexualized to a certain extent. But, you know, there's a big argument about that with the Doctor, isn't there? You know, he should be an asexual being, some people say. Yes, well, there's romance. We saw the whole issue with Rose, didn't we? So what are your feelings on that, Al?
Well, I think it's a good thing, because it makes him more human in the TV movie and in the book and the audiobook. I think it works.
I would agree with that, yeah. It gives us a lot more to reflect on, doesn't it? And it brings about so much more emotion if you bring that aspect to the character, I think.
What did you think of the person they chose to play the Master?
Eric Roberts. Memorable performance. I think.
Yeah, I think he does. He does stand out, definitely.
He does it justice. I remember, you know, people like... I think Christopher Lloyd was rumoured at one point. That would have been interesting. Roberts brings a certain amount of gravitas. He gets the campness to a certain extent, but he also has the hard edge, which someone like Anthony Ainley used to have, didn't he? He had those two in abundance. He was a
definitely very
classically well-trained actor.
Did you think occasionally, though, they went a bit too far with the gore factor of his Master, trying to keep an adult audience interested?
I mean, I was going to focus on that, the whole tone of the book. If we sort of start to talk about the novel, Al, there's a few ways in which Gary Russell has enhanced the narrative, isn't he? Apparently, there was no actually filmed footage completed by the time Gary started to write this, so he was actually going off a first draft of the script.
Wow, because the book is... I've always thought that when I've watched it, and you get this with a couple of films I've seen over the years. The book, when I buy the book or the film, the book's always much better, and that was definitely the case with this.
I think he's done a remarkable job, to be perfectly honest. It's so vivid, the opening scenes, it's very dark for Doctor Who. In the book, as opposed to the film, he expands upon the fact that Chang has this gang lifestyle, and it really gives him more of a background than you actually get from the film, which is explained. His gang membership is explained in just a few short moments in the film, isn't it? But you get that.
Well, it's not even that. I think, you know, you sort of see him at the beginning when Sylvester walks out of the TARDIS as sort of in the gang, and you think it's, you know, it's sort of involved with the shooting of Sylvester's Doctor, and then that's about it, I think.
Yes, we see him chase, don't we?
Yeah.
Just in the film, but we get this whole backstory where his brother has been killed. The female sort of companion he's with at the time is actually killed as well, isn't she?
Yeah.
In the moments before the TARDIS arrives. There was a lot of controversy at the time, wasn't there, that the Doctor had been gunned down. People tend to forget the fact that didn't actually kill him. It's actually Grace later in the book who kills him, isn't it, by attempting the invasive procedure and not understanding.
Yeah, and they're sticking the implement into him, we get stuck in him, basically.
Yeah, obviously not understanding the Time Lord's biology.
Oh, it's weird. I don't know. I listen to it and I think this is not really for the sort of audience Doctor Who is sort of aiming at. It's always had a bit more, you know, edginess since then, but it's sort of manages to cover both bases. It still be for children and adults these days.
It was such a vast difference, wasn't it? I mean, if you look at Survival, the last of the classic series, that was going a little bit darker for Doctor Who at the time. There was sinister happenings in suburbia. We had the Master.
Or things like Curse of Fenric, which has got quite dark elements in it.
Yes, but this was taking it to another level. You know, people would people may speak about, oh, the Americanization, they had to have guns in it, they had to have a gun battle of some sort. Yeah,
just... I think in some ways that, you know, it's not as bad as it could be, because you had all the virgin books where, you know, people just let loose on all the things you'd never expect to happen to the Doctor, basically.
Very true, Al. You're somebody who read the Virgin novels, and I'm not.
Yeah, that's how I got through the wilderness, but I did read most of the Virgin novels.
Yeah, that's me. So Doctor Who was probably more sanitised for me, and it came as that much of a shock, but even you have just said it came to a shock to you, came as a shock to you, didn't it?
Well, yeah, because, you know, it was just... Well, you know, nothing for ages, and you had the books, and that got you through the period. And then, wow, we've got New Who, and you're thinking, this is going to hopefully get it back. And it just went, no, it's not going to happen.
To lighten the tone somewhat, Al, I think we need to lighten it now, don't we, a little bit?
Definitely.
I'd like to talk about what you think Gary Russell's influences are in this book, because I think he has a very lovely way of putting language across. One line that stuck out for me is his description of Grace. He mentions her as having eyes that laughed no matter what mood she was in. And I think that just sums up her brightness as a character, Daphne Asprey's beauty in the film. You know, if he hadn't seen footage at this time, perhaps she wasn't cast at the time, I don't know. But he captures her character very well, doesn't he?
I think he does character great with all the characters, even the small ones are just in it for, like, you know, a couple of minutes. The professor who you know, who's made the atomic clock, he describes his sort of crumbs or salmon crumbs over him and wine spilling onto his shirt, and that was a sort of act. So, you know, he describes everyone beautifully. Gary does.
I think so, and he actually dedicates this book at the beginning to Terence Dix, who he says encouraged him to want to write a Doctor Who book, and all the various involvement Gary has had with Doctor Who over the years. Obviously, Target was a big part of his life growing up.
Definitely. You know, we I don't think we'd be in the Doctor Who situation that we're in now without Gary Russell, to be bluntly honest.
But I think he's also learnt from other authors in the Target range. I think there's a bit of Robert Holmes about his writing style as well.
Definitely. He does like, if he can manage it, quite a sort of bit of goriness, Gary does, if he can get away with it, like Robert Holmes would if he could.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken elsewhere before about The Two Doctors. That was the only Robert Holmes Target novel. You know, there's very vivid macabre scenes in there of death and murder. And that comes across in that opening, in the opening salvo as well, doesn't it, in the gun battle?
Oh, definitely. You sort of feel this isn't normal Doctor Who territory. This is modern San Francisco from the start of the book. You know, when he comes out of the TARDIS, and the minute he gets gunned down, I don't think he says a word, does he, the Sylvester's Doctor?
You know, he speaks when he's in the hospital, that sort of...
Speaking in his hospital, the minute he just gets out of the TARDIS and immediately shot, you'll go, what? Even when I watched that, I was a bit...
Yeah, maybe you sort of see... In the actual television movie, you know, you see the jacket he's wearing, you see the sort of feathers come out of it, don't you? The cotton come out of it as a bullet hit. Very artistically shot like that.
It's beautifully shot, and I like the bits in the book where, you know, Gary has the jelly beans in, you know, Sylvester's hat. It's just really little clever bits like that.
Yeah, you know, that's a very Terence Dix thing to do, isn't it? A very, perhaps Ian Marta as well. We haven't done many of his
here or
elsewhere in the past, but we will get on to them soon, listeners.
Definitely.
Looking forward to those.
I just like the way what Gary sort of connects the past to the future, and he does that a lot in his other stuff.
Yeah, and he expands, doesn't he? He keeps the humour as well. You get in the humorous situations with the jelly baby being offered to the policeman.
Well, he sort of flips out on a sixpence, because, you know, the minute he gives the jelly baby, and luckily he got a nice green-flavoured one, he nicks the gun and pretends to shoot himself. So he sort of flips it on his head, I think, a bit.
Yeah, such an eccentric British way, isn't it? And Grace actually uses the line. I thought in the film it was, he's British, but she says he's English in the book. But, it works either way, doesn't it?
It's about the same, I think.
You know, it's the worldwide view of Britain is England, basically, isn't it? And London and the...
Drinking tea and all that sort of stuff. Eccentric millionaires.
Yes, it's bowler hats and umbrellas. Gary, as we said before, Gary Russell adapted this from an early version of the script. Quite a few differences in the actual text. Just picked out a few of those. Talking about his writing style, there's a moment of great pathos as well, isn't there? It doesn't come across in the film at all, you know, for pacing reasons. At that moment, Grace is given a little bit of backstory, isn't she, about her mother dying. Beautifully explained that she saw an elderly doctor going out of the room shaking his head, and she remembers her father crying, and it gives you the it gives you the sense that's where her impetus to become a doctor came from.
Yeah, and there's a beautiful image, I don't know, throughout the book with her character, and it's just sort of, you know, the whole reason for becoming a doctor is she wants to cheat death so her mother can live. I mean, we all understand that.
The one thing sticks out better for me, which she doesn't come across as well in the book, is the description of the TARDIS console room, because this one is still my ultimate favourite. It's absolutely beautiful.
I was going to ask about that, because in the book it is described great when Paul McGann's doctor gets into the TARDIS.
Right.
But I can't remember that great description in the movie. I can just remember him not being very keen and saying, I'm going to have to change this or something.
Yeah, it's so visually strong for me, though, you know, seeing it up on screen. It's such a beautifully designed set. I just felt it took something away, but, you know, it's so beautiful on film that it's hard to describe in text, you know. Gary does his very best.
I was just thinking, I think there's a lot of that, you know, a lot of the description of the TARDIS, which is pretty similar to how Peter Capaldi's Doctor made the TARDIS.
Ah, excellent. Ed, can you sort of elaborate on that a bit more?
There's the bits with the, you know, how he's made it into the cathedral, and there's the sort of lectern in the main TARDIS console room, and I think there's a lot of similarities to Peter Capaldi's TARDIS.
Yes, that cloister room is just something else, isn't it?
You know, we see beautiful. It is just beautiful.
We see it briefly in Legopolis with the old video camera. Tom was sort of loitering about in his last adventure. But it's given so much more scope with that US budget, isn't it?
Well, that's why I think it would have been a great thing if we had actually got a series, because you could have had that mammoth US budget at the time and the best special effects, but it just didn't happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, can I also mention the very end scene as well, the departure. There's the sense that both the Doctor and Grace ask each other to go with them, don't they?
Yeah, it's not, you know, the Doctor forcing a hand, it's basically, do you want to come with me? And then she sort of asks him the same, and it's like, well, it's up to you.
It put me in mind of the Green Death, the Doctor leaving Joe Grant. And there's so much... It's a very skillful art by Gary Russell, isn't it, of explaining this? Because it's a very British way of saying what is unsaid, isn't it? What is unsaid is more important.
Just with a look or a gesture or something like that.
Yeah, and the fact it's done on text and in audiobook, you know, Paul... You got to say, Paul's performance in this is brilliant. You can tell why he's so good at Big Finish. He's such a good actor in the audio medium and medium.
The sound quality wasn't that great. I think it's one of the best audiobooks I've listened to in quite a while.
Yeah, he's so enthusiastic, isn't he? You know, this is a great performance. I mean, I have listened to a few of the abridged releases of Target audiobooks in the past, read by John Pertwee, read by Colin Baker, read by Peter Davison, and perhaps there isn't the level of performance that Paul gives in this. This is like a bridge, as a TV movie is a bridge between the classic series and the old series. This audiobook recording is a bridge between the audio releases we get now and possibly the Big Finish releases in levels of performance.
Oh, definitely. Oh, yeah.
It was actually 50,000 words to begin with, and he actually cut it down for 25,000 for the audio.
Blimey, that would have been a big book.
Yeah, it's just mainly the differences I've written about now. You know, one of Lee's gang is female. She's not actually in the film.
It's two
males he's with. I can't remember. Do they actually die in the film? His they just leave him, don't they? Don't they just run off and leave him in the film?
They just run off and leave him there. It's none of those things. What Gary has done a lot better in the book. There's a lot of unexplained things in the TV thing. That's what I thought about it.
Yeah, there's no mechanical failure at the end in the TARDIS, but I think he's cut out that ending here because he just has Grace wandering off to a party, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's no... I quite like that, the fact it connects with the same being a vinyl junkie. I love that bit with the vinyl in the TARDIS. And
yeah, it's...
It's not working.
It sounds like an old sort of classic jazz song, doesn't it? But it was actually a new composition for the movie, I think. I'm trying to remember the name of that song, but it is a memorable one.
And great at that bit at the beginning with, you know, Spester drinking tea and playing exactly would be doing that.
And it's a shame, I've got to say this audiobook, it's a shame they don't have the theme tune composition from the movie. They go back to the...
Go back to
the Davison one, don't they? The early Davison years, 80s one.
Yeah, they go back for that. What I'm just trying to think is... Because Big Finish use a different one, don't they, for the McGanns?
Yes, they've got their own compositions of...
They've got the one... Oh, Mr. X-Bond.
David Arnold.
David Arnold did theirs.
Yeah, very enjoyable, but this is probably one of my favourite, still one of my favourite theme tune arrangements of Doctor Who. I like the fact
that... Oh, it's great, it is good.
I like the fact it starts with the middle eight and you have the whole narration with a little bit of backstory for the Master.
Do you think it connects well with modern Master or not very well? That's what I was thinking earlier.
He's far more measured, isn't he? They really have gone quite over the top with the Master, John Sim, and Derek Jacobi as the Master had the measuredness of a Delgado, didn't he? Or an Ainley.
Definitely. When Miguel Gomez is just on, you know, the complete scale of greatness, but completely psychopath.
But I think she gets it, but I think John Sim went a little too over the top from Jacobi, didn't he? You know, I think Gomez has it down to a fine art now between being calculated, cold, and measured, and being over the top.
I do think that Michelle Gomez is definitely the best mistress master at the moment.
I would agree with that. I'll definitely. It has just reminded me of Gary Russell's vivid writing at the beginning as well. We get a little bit more backstory for the Master, and he describes the sort of ooze that he's become in the container, doesn't he? He said only the Master's eyes were visible, and that's really sort of, it's a very sort of disgusting description, but it keeps you listening, doesn't it?
Most definitely. That sort of nasty creature that's inside Bruce's body is horrifically written. You know, it's quite a nasty thing. And then when Grace gets it on her skin and it sort of blisters her skin, it's quite nasty. You know, I think it's well done in the TV movie as well. But I think it comes over as more sort of menace in the book.
Would you class that as body horror, Al?
Yeah, most definitely, because it's sort of some form of... insect life form the Master's turned into, and that sort of splattering of goo on her, definitely.
So yeah, I think we've sort of moved towards our overall thoughts now, Al. Shall I go first, or do you want to go first?
You can go first.
Okay, yes, for me, it's a bit of a mismatch of very good ideas. It doesn't gel, and I think that's to do with the amount of production companies involved, you know, having to go between BBC Enterprises, Worldwide, Amblin. The fact it's a cross-Atlantic production. There's so many good ideas in this. So many wonderful performances, both in the film and the audiobook by Paul. Paul is superb. The casting is great. I really like Grace. I really like Chang Li. I do really like Eric Roberts. It's just something's missing from it. I can't tell what it is, Al. You know, I can't put it all together yet. I've had a think.
I'm sort of on the same wavelength because it works, but there are sort of bits what could need tweaking, and I think the actress they've got is very good, but as we've seen with other things, like would you say it's the same problem they had with Tortured Miracle Day, but it's sort of trying to explain the idea of something British to other, you know, they get the sort of idea, but they don't get the whole sort of ethos.
That is the analogy I have been looking for, Al. That's superb. Miracle Day, definitely. I don't think they learned enough from the TV movie for that. And you know, audiences have changed. I suppose they must have thought at the time that with modern television, how we can pick up things from around the world so quickly, so easily. They obviously thought modern audiences were more sophisticated in terms of watching television from other countries. But I still think they hadn't learned enough lessons. It's quintessentially British Doctor Who. You've got to have it focused in this country, I think. You've got to have it based here, haven't you? You can have the odd trip we've seen in Series 6, Matt Smith going to America, Matt Smith's Doctor, but I think you've got to keep it grounded in the British sensibilities, haven't you?
Definitely, definitely. I think whenever you're writing a Doctor Who script or storyline book, you just have that sort of 10 things about British in front of you, and you'll get the Doctor right.
If there is a Bible, that's what it is. British.
Definitely. British-Scottish these days.
Scottish, yeah. Filmed in Wales, of course. We've got it all going on. We just need a Northern Irish influence now, and we'll probably get an Irish doctor one day.
maybe. But I know how you feel with the TV movie, because I've had so much hope and promise for it at the time. And I'm thinking, yeah, we will have, you know, because all we had was the books, and then we had Big Finish, which, you know, sort of got us through it. It's going to come back. It's brilliant. It's great. And then it's like you sat through it, and then you did sort of go at the end feeling, well, it was good, thanks to Paul McGann and the actors, but you thought it just didn't feel quite right.
Yes, same here, Al. I mean, interestingly enough, this novelisation was only released in the UK. It wasn't released worldwide until a Tales from the TARDIS CD MP3 Volume 2 with a few other Doctor Who stories was released worldwide in 2004, I think.
Oh, really? That late? Because I had the book, went about the same time. I think the book came out at the same time as the TV program, didn't it?
Book did, yes, and then the audiobook wasn't released till the following year, 1997.
That's right. I think I did have the audiobook as well. I definitely have the book. It's somewhere here.
So the very good things for me about the book are Paul. We got Paul as the Doctor. It's led to so many things. It's led to Big Finish. Some would argue he's the longest-serving TV Doctor because he didn't finish his reign on television until 2013, of course, with the Night of the Doctor mini episode.
that was. I will say this: I think the mini episode, in some ways, is slightly better. Even though you got Tom Baker back, I think the mini episode was slightly better than the big episode.
He's so good, isn't he? And I think with the aging process of the Doctor now, Paul still looks the same age as he did in Night of the Doctor. You could easily have him back for a multi-Doctor. Well, I think he's such a talented actor. I'd love to see him do that.
Oh, it'd be great. This is a great thing about Paul McGann because I was watching with my mum about 2 years ago, and she was watching Paul McGann. Saying, "How old is he?" Oh, four. He was late 30s. You'd go and I'm thinking, "No, he's older than that."
No, no, he's mid-50s now, isn't he? Like,
so yeah, he's mid-50s. Well, he about a year or two that was, and my mum went, "Oh, he's looks like he's in his late 30s." It's like he's always had that sort of face, though.
I think he was around about 34, 35 when this film was made, wasn't he? 20 years now gone. It's very fast.
After the great with Neil and I.
Yeah, do you think it was a fitting send-off? Was it a good idea to have Sylvester at the beginning?
Well, with all the conventions we had, we've heard all different stories why, but I think, yeah, it did work. I think it was some of the better scenes in the film were his.
Yeah, no, a lot of people, particularly from the American side of the production, were utterly against that. Apparently, you can see their point of view in terms of it being confusing for viewers. You get this hero at the start of the film, or this main character introduced, and he changes. Yes. But it is nice for Sylvester to get an ending, wasn't it, I think? You know, when you consider Colin didn't really, apart from Big Finish, tying that up for him with the adventure last year.
Oh, which is very worth buying all this downloading, because it's very good. I think Sylvester, well, you know, we all know he got badly treated at the end of it, you know, just having it completely cut and no reason, and then I think that was quite nice then to bring him back and have his own ending, really.
Yeah, it must be nice to film in Vancouver as well, although it would have been quite a cold time of year, wouldn't it, I suppose, over there.
Yeah, I suppose so, yeah, because when was it filmed? Late December, wasn't it, I think?
It's got to be sort of around the turn of the year, wasn't it, if it was ready for May, I think.
Are we going to mention the terrible hair of Paul McGann, though?
Yes, we can do. He's not a fan of that wig, is he, I don't think. So.
Yeah, because I think he'd been doing another film where they give him a crew cut about a week before. And that's why he had the wig.
Yeah, I think that
costume was nearly one of the better ones.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree with that 100%, Al. 100%. You know, the TARDIS console is superb. If I think now about my overall thoughts, yes, as I said, Paul is great. The TARDIS console is one of my very favourites. I love the theme tune arrangement. The British humour is there. This is where I go towards the negative points. The British humour is there, but there's not enough of it. The sensibilities of the character are too pulled in too many directions. As we've said, I'm mentioning it for the third time now. There was three or four production companies involved, so across the Atlantic at that time. Yeah, it falters a little in the middle towards the end. The novel gives you so much great background, which expands and keeps your interest. Perhaps I did waver a little bit, as I do with the TV version towards the end. Scores-wise, I think I'm pottering between an 8 and a 9. I'm going to say a 9. I'm going to say a 9 overall for the novelisation, the audiobook and the film.
I would probably, for the audiobook and the novelisation, give it a 9 or a 10, because it's brilliant. But I do have niggles with the movie, so I'd probably give that an 8.
In some sort of alternative world, Al, if you could have a joined-up Doctor Who between Sylvester and this TV movie, and then Paul had done a few years, and then perhaps someone else had taken over, and we still got what we have now with Chris, would you have liked that?
Oh, yeah, well, I'm a diehard Doctor Who fan, so definitely. I would have liked that a lot. That's why I love all this sort of what Big Finish have brought to the Paul McGann character.
Definitely, he's been going on for many years with him now.
It's been going on for many years now, and it's always him who comes back and says, "I want to do it still." Because, you know, Big Finish could say, "Well, you've done your sort of regeneration stuff; you don't have to do it any longer." And he always goes, "No, you bring the right stories, mate, and I will do it." He loves doing it.
Yes, I mean, I think we both thoroughly enjoyed this album. I mean, I would have liked to have seen a series, I think. Some of the plans in the documentary on the Revisitations 1 box set, some of the plans for the series would have thrown fandom into meltdown, I think, because they would have had the Doctor searching for his father and...
Was there plans to do the whole sort of Decalogue book thing?
There were plans, sort of. Well, the pitch they put in, Philip Siegel, the producer, actually mentions in the documentary that they put this in more as a pitch, but they possibly would have remade... They said they would have remade a few of the old stories, which would have gone down like a lead balloon, I think. But he actually said that... He actually says that was just to get the funding, and it wouldn't have necessarily gone in that direction if they had a series.
I thought the other plan was like to somehow connect it to the older Doctors, people, so it's like Colin and Peter at the time. I think there was those sort of ideas, wasn't there?
Yeah, we possibly would have had more multi-doctor episodes, which I've always loved, on a bigger budget. So, there was plans initially to have Tom Baker regenerate into Paul McGann, which would have caused a lot of fan meltdown again.
That would be very interesting. But the really interesting is they work so well together.
Paul and Tom in the light at the end.
Yeah, the scenes they've got in light at the end are just fantastic, them two bouncing off each other.
Doctor Who theme music, originally created by Delia Derbyshire and Ron Grainer. Arrangement for the television movie, composed by John Debney. No copyright infringement intended. Doctor Who Target Files Special, the novel of the film review, featured Michael Winks in Swansea and Alexander Gibbons in Exeter, and was recorded on May the 27th, 2016.